Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 126 of the Salvaggio and Freddy Sports Podcast. Back for you here on another Wednesday night after a week off, January 18th, 7:19 p.m. We'll be starting off with football this week instead of, you know, the typical moments of the week. We're going to save that a little towards the end, switch up the structure a little bit. But before we get into football stuff, Ryan, after the week off, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Playoffs were good so far. Had a couple of maybe consider them upsets. Bruins are still playing well. Red Sox are doing some things. So all things considering, doing pretty well. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm fine. I mean, as long as the Bruins are just playing this good, I mean, I can't really.
As long as they continue to be a wagon and no one seems to be able to stop them.
Yep.
Okay, I mean, fair enough.
Pretty ridiculous. Like, we really haven't had anything negative to talk about this year, to be honest with you.
Not really. I think
the occasional injury.
Yeah, I was just going to say the only negative thing from recently is the DeBrusque injury, but they've seemingly kind of put that in the rearview mirror too, and everyone's playing well still. So nothing too crazy.
Yeah, can't really complain, but we will get to the Bruins later. Actually, I forgot to pull up the little Twitter stream here. We'll start with football and our 2022-2023 season studs and does, the last of the season.
Yeah, so like I texted you, I think last week, maybe the week before, I went through, tallied up all the studs and duds from the season. I kind of grouped us together when we had certain guys on and off. And I thought instead of doing, because it's obviously been 2 weeks now since the last Pats game against the Bills, didn't really need to recap that game at all. Anybody watched it saw what happened. Kind of the writing was on the wall with the Patriots when they had to, you know, choose their own destiny type of thing. Didn't work out. So instead of doing the studs and duds from that game, I thought, like you said, we'd pull together ours from the entire season. I will start with the studs, or my number three stud. I had Josh Uche, a guy that really came on strong halfway through the season and finished up pretty strong. When it came to the times he was on the studs list, only twice, that was tied for sixth. But like I said, he really came on strong at the end. 15 games, 27 tackles, 11 and a half sacks, 14 quarterback hits, 9 tackles for losses, and 2 forced fumbles. You could argue, I think maybe on the outside of Ramondre Stevenson, had one of the biggest leaps on the team from last year. Look at his stats from a year ago in just 12 games. 12 tackles, 3 sacks, 4 quarterback hits, 3 tackles for losses. No forced fumbles, but did have a fumble recovery, so that was the only difference from this year compared to last. He was excellent, like I said, down the stretch, and we talked about it plenty of times. Really became that 1-2 punch with Matt Judon, and is a guy that I'm looking forward to seeing as the seasons go on, and, you know, hopefully he can have a long-tenured Patriots career because he finally broke out this year. We talked about that halfway through the season, too. It's good to see from him.
Yep, absolutely a late bloomer. I'd say biggest one you could pick out from the team. Mm-hmm. My number three stud was Mike Onwenu. Just, I think, the most, like, consistent and, you know, at the same time, under the radar, like, offensive lineman on the team this year. You know, you could put David Andrews in that camp, too, but, you know, he missed some time due to injury. I'm giving it to Mike Onwenu this year. There's really nothing to complain about with him this year. Like, truly, he played just over 1,000 snaps with 1,046. Only allowed 1 sack, 1 QB hit, had 0 holds, led the team in total snaps played, allowed the least amount of sacks, and took the least amount of penalties. It's crazy how he dropped so high, so low in the draft. This is a guy that should have been like a first or second round pick.
Yeah, he's excellent. You could have made, you can make a case too.
Not a big guy either.
No, it's really not for that position.
How good he is.
Yeah, I was going to say you could definitely make a case snub for a Pro Bowl, maybe with how well he played. Because like I put it in the outline, I was going to do Onwenu, but again, to switch it up, one time on the studs list all season, that was tied for the least amount with a bunch of guys. Like you said, incredibly underrated season. He was definitely their best offensive lineman. I think, you know, Andrews was in and out of the lineup with injuries. It's not his fault. But Onwenu was the most consistent guy. He was in there all the time. And like you said, no holding penalties, which was something that plagued this offensive line, particularly in the tackle spots, was excellent all season, as you mentioned.
Yeah, he was just dominant.
Definitely a guy you don't have to worry about moving forward as long as you continue to have him on the roster. Like, don't let that guy slip away because, like you said, he is an absolute steal where he was drafted.
And maybe he'll get some help this offseason.
You better hope so. And you know, the offense as a whole better hope so because they need it, as we know. Mm-hmm. Back to mine, my two, maybe no surprise for those who watch, talk about a absolute steal of a draft pick from where he was drafted, third round, Marcus Jones, the guy I'm just putting on this as a utility man at this point, because you don't really know. I mean, he is a cornerback, of course, but at this point, you don't really know what his position is with this team. He was on the studs list four times this season. That was tied for the fourth most. Going through it, coverage stats, 7 of 31, 310 yards allowed, one touchdown allowed, had five pass breakups, two interceptions, a 55 completion percentage when he was targeted, and a 73.1 rating. For the rest of his defensive stats, 39 tackles, 34 solo and five assists, two tackles for losses and a fumble recovery. His punt return stats, 29 returns, 362, one touchdown. Of course, that was the 84-yard game winner against the Jets, 12 and a half yards per return. I believe I had it somewhere in here. The punt return yardage, the touchdowns, and the yards per return, that led all NFL players. And he was, of course, named to the NFL's All-Pro team as a special teams representative. Kickoff returns, 27 returns, 645 yards, 23.9 yards per return on that. And then his offensive stats, four receptions, four targets, 78 yards, a touchdown, 19 and a half yards per reception. Absolute Swiss Army knife. We said that plenty of times this year. And like I said, for a guy that was drafted in the third round, you know, a decently high pick. But I don't think we definitely expected this type of production from him on all facets of the game and across the board. He was great anywhere he was put in this roster.
Yeah, we certainly didn't expect all this. And I feel like the first time the Patriots have had a gadget guy like this in God knows how long. I can't even think of another guy quite like this if he keeps this up. It's pretty insane. My number two stud was Ramondre Stevenson. Had to show some love for him this year. Absolutely. Secondary growth was pretty stupendous. Just over 1,000 yards, only five rushing touchdowns. He had 1,040 on 210 carries. So that's, just under 5 yards a carry, I think.
I think so, yep.
Good math by me. 69 catches on 88 targets. That's really good. Only 19 that weren't catches on those 88 targets is pretty stupendous. Again, I don't know why I'm feeling that word tonight.
It's a go-to word.
Through the air. So, six touchdowns isn't going to, light the world on fire, but what's that? 1,461 total yards, six touchdowns. Just an awesome season. Very consistently the Patriots' best player on offense.
Oh, absolutely. There's not even any question about that. 100%. Like I said, you could argue him and Uche are the two biggest guys to take step forwards this season, which is great to see.
A guy you had to step up to with Damian Harris's health in question for much of the second half of the season. So
absolutely. And obviously you don't know what you have in Kevin Harris or Pierre Strong because of obviously the rookie status. So, we talked about it. He kind of fell off at the end of the season. That was expected though with the workload he had. So now hopefully, you go into the off season, he gets some rest and comes out and plays as well as he did in the following season. Cause he's probably going to be a guy they have to lean on pretty heavily again with so many questions moving forward. Who knows the direction they're going to go in.
Most definitely.
All right. And then number one consensus. If you follow the show all throughout the Patriots season, this guy made the studs list eight times. That was first by quite a bit. He won, just looking at the poll on Twitter really quickly, he was the fan vote for the stud of the year. Matt Judon, 17 games, 60 tackles, 15 and a half sacks. That led the Patriots. 28 quarterback hits. I believe that led the Patriots as well. 14 tackles for losses. That was number one on the team. Three pass breakups, two forced fumbles, and one fumble recovery. He had at least one sack in 10 of the 17 games for NFL stat-wise. He was fourth in the NFL in sacks, fourth in quarterback hits, and 13th in tackles for losses. We talked about it. Judon was a guy we had a couple of questions going into the season because of how great the fall off was at the end of the season last year. You saw it a little bit this year, but not as bad. And I think that we talked about that too. It's just how, teams are covering him differently. Maybe he was dropping into, more pass coverage towards the end of the season, but he put together a really full season, was great again. And again, was the anchor of that defense. It seemed like throughout the majority of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I forget, because I made me think of this because he's a big Judon guy. Happy birthday to friend of the program, Mike McClellan, today. He'll probably be on the show in a week or two to do his Super Bowl prop bets again. So
okay,
that for anybody who knows him. Last time we did that, you were gone for something. So it was just me and him. So now we'll have all three of us for Super Bowl prop bets, our Super Bowl special. So that'll be fun.
That'll be good.
Did
that
2 years ago. I don't think we did it last year.
If it was 2 years ago, that was probably my COVID year.
It might have been, yeah.
Yeah, honestly. We had the rotating door of guest hosts at that point because I didn't know when the hell I was coming back. So,
yeah, but had to throw the shout out in there. Happy birthday to him, friend of the program. Matthew Judon, my number one stud as well. How could he not be an all pro season, you know, fringe defensive player of the year season? Could definitely make the case for him. Mm-hmm. There, just ridiculous. Didn't have quite the fall off. You had some hiccups here and there, you know, quieter games second half of the season, but not nearly as bad as last year when he fell off a cliff. He was fantastic. Carried the defense on his back this year, and I am expecting much of the same going forward.
As am I. Big Judon fan, big Judon supporter. So hopefully you can get some more of that. And again, with the extra help from Uche, that'll only make things easier for him. It'll be two guys you have to worry about instead of one. And then you throw guys like, you know, we could have had Dietrich Wise.
Yeah,
he was going to be an honorable mention for me. I think he made the studs list six times, maybe seven, if I'm remembering correctly.
Anthony Jennings.
Yeah, he had a couple of flashes throughout the season. So
here and there, yep.
Linebacker has never really been a position of worry, or, you know, not the biggest position of need with this team. They always seem to find some good guys, and it seems like they've got a couple of a really good ones moving forward, which is good. Again, with so many question marks on this team, that's one position you don't have to worry about moving forward, looks like.
No, definitely not.
All right, on to the dud side of things then, the stinkers from this year. I kind of cheated on this one, maybe, because this guy and, you know, this area of the team, I guess, did make the dud list. Surprisingly, only one time this year. I think we tried to focus more so on players, but if you're talking about downers for the Patriots, I think it goes without saying I have to put Bill Belichick on here and maybe the coaching staff as a whole. Like I said, one time on the duds list, but with how this season went down, he's the main reason I think this team was where they were at. Obviously, we talked about it. Everybody talked about it. Matt Patricia and Joe Judge to run your offense, set your quarterback back a year after a promising rookie year last year. The offensive line depth, as we saw throughout the season, that turned out to be a disaster. You know, you ended up having guys like Connor McDermott. You had to bring back Marcus Cannon. So, you know, lack of, how do I want to word it? I can't think of the word. Just the focusing on, you know, certain positions needing some more depth that didn't have it. Offensive line was huge. And then something I've kind of nitpicked here. I know Jonathan Jones had a good season. Jalen Mills was hurt. But we talked about it when the year started and we were both worried. Jalen Mills going in as your top corner, you know, would Jonathan Jones be able to come back off an injury? Played well at times, but again, got exposed a little down the road. Just the ineptitude to, you know, focus on some pretty important positions here. The tackle spots where you struggle, the number one corner. Bill Belichick, for me, has to make the dud list because this whole crap shoot of a season kind of falls into his lap here. You know, you're not a playoff team, I think, because of his decisions. Before the season started, during the season, some of the, you know, the game plan, stuff like that. Obviously, the Chicago loss, we nitpicked that, thinking that maybe they were looking forward to the game after that. Bill Belichick has to make the dud list for me. You can throw Matt Patricia in there as well. But again, it all falls back on Bill.
Yeah, I think he definitely, you know, put them in a position, not completely, but, you know, it's not like he gets all the blame. But
true,
he put them in a position to take a step back with changing the offensive structure around Mac Jones. The play calling, you know, every team has bad play calling sometimes, but, you know, you can definitely accredit bad play calling to, you know, the team's struggles this year. We both expected them to be around like a 7-9 win team. They went right in the middle where you said they would be at 8-9. I had them at 7-10. It was just an entirely predictable, chaotic clusterfuck of a season on offense, and it could have been avoided with better business practices. And you have to put some blame on Bill Belichick. And I absolutely think a duds appearance for the final studs and duds of the season is not, you know, too crazy on your behalf.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Didn't have him on mine, but I definitely think there's a case for it. My number three dud was Jonnu Smith. You know, they didn't use him a lot, so I wanted to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, but it's a guy that you're paying a lot to do nothing.
He had a worse year this year than he did last year. Like, we thought couldn't get worse than what he did last year. And again, like you said, maybe you're not using him right. The offense as a whole was a crapshoot. Got hurt, of course, but yeah, it comes down to that. Absolutely. I didn't mean to cut you off, but just,
no, you're good.
You, like you said, you're paying the guy a ton of money, and he is trending downward more so than we thought he was at the end of last season. So not great there. I was going to have him as an honorable mention. Maybe even my three, but switched out last second. I'm glad you had him in here as yours.
Yeah. And as I have noted here in the outline, he had 245 yards to the air and 27 catches, 38 targets. That yardage total was largely inflated by a 153 yard catch. So
when I saw that, was a great point by you.
Yard receiver.
Yeah, like, I didn't even think of that. I'm like, that's a very good point.
It's it really makes me wonder, the more and more time passes, I think I know the answer, but why they even signed him in the first place. Like, this is a guy that got a lot more money than he should have, whose best season, I think, is like 460 yards.
Yeah, like, it might have been his going into his contract year, which I mean, makes sense. Like,
did he get a 4-year, $50 million contract? Am I remembering?
Yeah, I think him and Henry got basically the same deal, didn't they? It was like 4 for 52 or 4 for 54, something along the lines of that.
Jonas Smith got 4 and 50. That's crazy. And I know you have to overpay for free agents. It's, you know, thing you can make the case for certain players in any sport, not just football, but. Jonnu Smith, like, I don't understand why they signed him if they clearly don't have enough confidence in him, enough of a plan in him. You think you commit $50 million to a guy, you're looking at around that typical production he had in Tennessee, if not better, around like 450, 500 yards, maybe more through the year. And at least Hunter Henry has made up for that a little bit, but you're just not getting enough production from the tight end position for how much you've committed to it. And the large reason for that is Jonnu Smith.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. We've talked about this plenty of times. The team that had always just bludgeoned teams to death with two tight end sets now all of a sudden can't figure out how to make it work. And again,
I'm going back to it.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember the first show we had, we're like, oh, we're going to get the two tight end sets back. Like, this is the new look offense. We're going to try and reincorporate this. Nope. It's really just Hunter Henry.
Never even tried it. Yeah,
and it's Henry every once in a while at this point. It's not always like a consistent threat, which sucks, but what a mess the signing has been.
Yeah, it's not been great. I mean, it's a contract. It's going to be tough to get out from under. I don't know if you're going to be even able to move him. I'm still holding out hope. I don't know if I'm dying on this hill alone here, but I still think the lack of production maybe came from not having a fullback and you had to use your tight ends as blockers more. But then, like you said, Hunter Henry's still able to do some stuff. So why can't Jonnu Smith kind of run the same kind of plays he does, get him involved more? So
yeah, looking at his contract now, if you cut him this year, it'd be just over $19 million dead cap. It drops to 6.4 in 2024. So maybe they cut ties with him after the season and just take the 6.4.
Let's go from there. Yeah.
Maybe they do it this year. I don't know if they'd want that much dead cap, but he's a non-factor.
Yeah, it's not great. It's a guy, like I said, had a ton of hope for. I thought when they signed him, it was going to take them out of the Hunter Henry running. And then again, you get two of them, you think it's going to be great. All, you know, rainbows and everything, ponies and everything. But in the end, it's not the case. It stinks because a guy I had hopes for. Back to me, a guy that we never have high hopes for when it comes to seeing him out on the field, and rightfully so, because he's just bad at everything. He would have made the duds list one more time if we did studs and duds from the Bills game, because he just absolutely blew a tackle on the night. I think was it the second one? Naheem Hines kickoff return, if you remember correctly. One of the ones. Completely whiffed on a tackle, got ran over. But it is Miles Bryant. He made the studs and duds list, the dud side of it, five times. That was tied for the second most. His stats on the season, coverage stats, 24 for 45, 326 yards allowed, four touchdowns allowed, four pass breakups, one interception, 53 completion percentage when quarterbacks targeted him, in a 97.1 rating. Some stats on that. And a lot of these are a little skewed. Jonathan Jones leads a lot of these categories, but he was the number one corner, so he was going up against the team's best competition. So maybe you can make a case that Miles Bryant should have been worse in these stats, but the receptions allowed, second most on the Patriots, targets second most for Miles Bryant, second most yards allowed, second most touchdowns allowed, had the second least interceptions, second worst completion percentage, and the second worst rating for a corner. I don't know why, and you know, hopefully, I think he's an RFA this year, so maybe they don't bring him back. I hope they don't, because I've said it before, I'll say it again. And you know, watching that Bengals and Ravens game, there maybe is some still hope that Miles Bryant isn't the worst corner in the game. But man, does he give Eli Apple a run for the worst corner? There's really, like I said, nothing he does well on a football field.
Yeah, it's ever since that Isaiah McKenzie game last year, it's gone downhill. Because he had some moments before then, but ever since, it's just not worked.
Teams actively go out of their way to find him on the field. Yeah, like, we know this guy sucks. We're going to go after him all game.
He's underskilled, so they target him. It was just like, I forget which game it was. I think it was the Chargers. Maybe might have been the Chargers game, but the corner's last name was like Kohu or something. I've never heard of him. He's like kind of a smaller corner. And he was getting targeted a bunch because he wasn't playing well. Like, that's what teams do to bad corners. And when you have a weakness there with Miles Bryant, teams are going to take advantage of it when it, you know, deems fit. And yeah, Miles O'Brien is a is an eyesore to watch sometimes.
That's putting it nicely.
Yeah. Isaiah Wynn is an easy choice for my number two dud of the year. He is so bad. I hope we never see him play for the Patriots again. There's always a trend of one Patriots offensive lineman, and even sometimes twice this year with Trent Brown, where one of them is just horrendous and stands out from the rest. It was Marshall Newhouse, then it was Jermaine Illuminor, who actually had a decent season with the Raiders this year. Now it's Isaiah Wynn. I hope the trend ends. But yeah, Isaiah Wynn was so bad. He allowed 5 sacks, 2 quarterback hits, took 5 holding penalties. This was while, you know, not playing in every game this season. As you have noted here from Mark Daniels, in 9 games played, he allowed 5 sacks and took a whopping 8 penalties. He finished the year on injured reserve and missed 8 games, but he finished tied with the 12th most penalties in the NFL. He's a complete liability. I don't have anything else to say. I hope I don't have to talk about him next year.
No, he's horrible. I mean, he could definitely make the case for Trent Brown in the spot too. They both finished with the most times in the duds list with 6, but for those stats, like you had the Mark Daniels one, Wynn played less and you still, I feel like, remember him as being the worst of the two. Like Trent Brown had some moments where he looked like Trent Brown out there. It kind of went game to game. We talked about that plenty of times where at times it didn't look, he wanted to be out there, but you just knew anytime Isaiah Wynn was out there, you knew you were going to get absolutely nothing out of him, because that's just the type of player he is at this point. He's not good. You want to talk about a guy that's undersized for a position. When you talk about Miles Bryant, you've been preaching it for the longest time, you know, move Isaiah Wynn off the tackle spot, put him at that guard, because nothing works. Concept
in the, you know, positional structure. And
absolutely. You know, yep. Makes sense.
Blind side versus not blind side. But in terms of execution, it was not. And, you know, just the way she goes.
Nope. Consensus number one then for the both of us. I was a little surprised you went Aguilar as well, but that is the one. Nelson Aguilar. I want to talk about a waste of money with Jonnu Smith at the tight end position. Nelson Aguilar is the waste of money at the wide receiver position.
Well, three guys with bad contracts in my duds.
Yeah, absolutely. Aguilar, 16 games this year, 31 receptions on 53 targets. That's a 58.5 percentage. 362 yards, 2 touchdowns, 11.7 yards per reception, 22.6 yards per game. That's a great stat when you're paying him all that money that you are. And 2 fumbles, couldn't hold on to the football, as we know. He played 1 extra game this year compared to last year, but had less catches, less yards per reception, less touchdowns, and less yards per game than last season. So kind of like Jonnu Smith, you didn't think Aguilar could get any worse. He did. And again, yeah, the offense stunk as a whole. He kind of leaned on Stevenson and Myers more. But I don't know if you knew this. I looked it up the other day. Again, the Buffalo game, of course, being 2 weeks ago. So maybe tough to remember. But he only played 4 snaps in that game, if you can believe that. So I think the Patriots might be done with Nelson Aguilar. We saw that at times this year. Tyquan Thornton played a lot more snaps than he did. Obviously, you had to put a Myers out there, of course, and Parker. But Nelson Aguilar is a guy I hope is done here, just because he literally gives you nothing at this point. Like, you had Kendrick Bourne in the doghouse for half the season, and he was able to do more than Nelson Aguilar, who's given, I feel like, every opportunity to shine and really never did.
Yeah, and I'm just really glad he's a free agent now. 31 catches on 53 targets is fucking pathetic for a guy you pay as much money as you did Nelson Aguilar. It was a guy I had my doubts from to begin with 2 years ago. You know, he had a career year, kind of a little bit of an outlier in Las Vegas, got a payday because of it. Just, it spelled bad news for me. Yep. He became less trustworthy over the course of the season. He was dropping easy passes more and more, it felt like, towards the end of the season, which is not what you want. Nope. He's just not good. And his UFA status is a blessing. Just
absolutely
say goodbye. Say
goodbye. If you're him, you hope a crap team that needs some receivers take a chance on it. I mean, maybe you can make the argument that the Patriots are a crap team that needs receivers, but we've been there, done that. Don't want Nelson Aguilar anymore. Again, I was right there with you. The same thing when they signed him to that contract. We both talked about it. I think when it happened, we're like, they need receivers. And again, you said it earlier that you have to overpay to get guys a lot of the time in free agency, but that seemed like the writing was on the wall there, that it was not going to work out, and it never really did.
It really never did.
No.
Goodbye, Nelson Aguilar.
Yep. Goodbye. Did have that one nice catch where I can't remember what game it was in, but he mossed somebody for a touchdown. But other than that, like, Name me one other good thing Nelson Agholor did in his Patriots tenure. I don't think you can.
Not a whole lot.
He did make the stud list, I believe, once, too, looking back at it. I went meant to look.
He had that 100-yard game.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't remember what game that was, but I was kind of surprised. I'm like, oh, we did have Nelson Agholor talk positive about him one time this year, but a whole lot more negative than positive when it comes to Nelson Agholor.
Bad football player.
Yep.
What is next? The end of season stuff with a whole lot of coaching staff.
Yeah, some uncharacteristic Patriots news, because obviously last offseason you didn't have any desire to go get an offensive coordinator or name coaches in certain positions. This year it seems like a lot of people think that or thought that maybe Robert Kraft has finally stepped in and told Bill Belichick, you needed to go out, sign some actual guys, go out and name some actual positions. Patriots, some of they're going to do that. This was, of course, from the big press release that kind of took Twitter by storm on the 12th of this month, saying that the New England Patriots and head coach Bill Belichick have begun contract extension discussions with Gerard Mayo that would keep him with the team long term. In addition, the team will also begin interviewing for offensive coordinator candidates beginning next week. Of course, we've seen that today. As you add to the outline, we'll get to who's being interviewed, who's potentially being looked at a little later. But I thought we'd start with the Gerard Mayo stuff, because that's kind of been the discussion point for a lot of people. Gerard Mayo, of course, was a guy that was seemingly highly coveted. I think it was the defensive coordinator position for Cleveland, and then the Carolina Panthers vacant. What's up?
Which has since been filled.
That's right, yep. But Mayo was in on that. He declined to go there and then declined the head coaching position of the Panthers. That led a lot of people to speculate, you know, what could be the Patriots. What did the Patriots say to him to get him to kind of, you know, jump off of these positions? I don't know. We really haven't talked about it because we didn't obviously no show last week. You and I haven't discussed it. I have my thoughts on what could be coming down the road for Gerard Mayo. What do you think, Patriots wise, what kind of made him want to stay here? And what do you think is down the road for Gerard Mayo if you had to speculate on anything?
I think they're saying to other teams, go away, because if we need him to be the head coach down the road, he will be the first guy to get offered the job.
Okay.
So that's where I'm at.
What do you think his position is going to be this year? Because I've seen some people say maybe assistant to the head coach or full-on defensive coordinator. If you had to maybe pick one or give your thoughts on that, what do you think?
I hope it's full-on defensive coordinator.
I do, too.
I trust him way more than Belichick. I think him declining interviews in Cleveland and Carolina is a good sign that, you know, he's leaning more this way.
Yep.
And that he's dedicated here, which, you know, I never really had much of a doubt with. He could have left last year and didn't. But yeah, I'm hoping it's a bigger defensive role, because like I said, I trust him more than Steve Belichick. So
absolutely. I'm right there with you this year. Lovely. Yep. This year, defensive coordinator position as a whole, I'm with you on the head coaching thing too. I think when Bill Belichick decides to step away, retire, whatever it may be, I think that's the only thing. Like, you wouldn't kind of make that promise or just kind of throw that out there for Mayo if you weren't thinking down the line, like you said. So I'm with you. I think down the line, you're looking at your next head coach in the Patriots. It's going to be Gerard Mayo, because why would you decline a head coaching position with the Panthers or an interview? If
a few reasons.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, but there's some hope on the horizon. They played well towards the end of the season. They got some decent draft capital, some pieces there. So, you know, maybe Gerard Mayo, a guy who wants to make a name for himself in the head coach spot, that would have been maybe the case to do so this season. I could think of some reasons why you wouldn't want to take the Cleveland defensive coordinator position, because it's Cleveland and they're never really in anything. But yeah, I think this is coming down the line. Whenever Bill wants to leave, gets out of here, I think Gerard Mayo is probably your next Patriots head coach. And I would 100% be okay with that, because I think he's a great coach in the making. You've seen him have success here the last couple of seasons. So right there with you. Defensive coordinator this season, and then somewhere down the line, make him the full-on head coach, because I think he's more than qualified and more than ready for it.
Would be lovely. Would really be a fan of that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, this time of the year for any teams that, I mean, even teams that are in the playoffs, you know, you see guys taking interviews. We saw a member of the San Francisco staff go to Tennessee today, which will obviously, you know, go into effect next season, not right now when they're in it. But everybody's speculating, guys are moving around. I'm sure we'll see plenty of guys with Patriots backgrounds in the mix of these jobs. We saw Monty Austin Fort become the GM of the Cardinals. Good luck to the Cardinals, because he sucks at drafting. Just so brutal. Cyrus Jones, Dominique Easley. Like, I'm trying to find the tweet.
Was his pick Isaiah Wynn?
Dominique Easley. On that one? Dominic Easley, Jimmy Garoppolo, good pick, but, you know, didn't work out here. Malcolm Brown, Jordan Richards, like one of the worst football players I've ever seen. Cyrus yeah. Jones also. Isaiah Wynn, Sony Michel right before Lamar Jackson. Duke Dawson, who I don't think played a regular season game for the Patriots. N'Keal Harry and Juwan Williams. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, it's just an epically terrible class of drafted players. So good luck to Arizona. Speaking of Arizona, Cliff Kingsbury has made headlines this offseason because he is just chilling in Taiwan and
he dipped.
Sounds like doesn't plan on coaching this year. So
would you have taken him as an OC if
yes.
if he was okay? I've seen some mixed reviews on that. I wasn't a huge fan of him, obviously, as we know, as a coach, the Cardinals, but I would have taken a chance, rolled the dice on an OC. Again, it would have fit Bill Belichick's narrative, as we've seen the last couple of seasons, of hire guys or bring guys and then are being paid by other teams. So maybe I think that might be why Cliff Kingsbury is now a resident of Taiwan, just taking that Cardinals money for the next couple of years, go out there and lay low for a little bit. Too. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So he's living the life right now. Like you said, probably not going to be coaching for a while. Why would he, when again, you have the money and you know, the life he's living right now. So he is out of the case, but other names that have stood out from you or for you, Evan Lazar had his top five candidates. Bill O'Brien is, of course, at a lot of people's the top of their list. Cliff Kingsbury was, of course, on that list. Zach Robinson, the Rams quarterback coach and pass game coordinator. Nick Caley, who we saw the Patriots say today, I believe it was. They're going to interview him tomorrow, I think, or sometime at the end of the week. But he is also interviewed for the Jets OC job. I wonder if you're him, which job is more enticing? Stick with the Patriots after they kind of screwed you over last year and naming Matt Patricia, or do you go to the Jets and deal with that dumpster fire? Yeah.
I would say the Patriots, like, definitely, but at least the Jets have receivers.
True.
Like, good young receivers and a good young running back in Breece Hall. So
that's true.
You know, pick what you can.
Pick your poison type of thing. Yeah.
I should say.
Charlie Weiss was also on that list as well. Ole Miss.
I don't want anyone associated with Charlie Weiss. No. So I'm out on Charlie Weiss.
I've seen some people that are high on him. Any particular reason why you're.
No, I don't like Charlie Weiss. I don't want to hire his son or nephew, whatever.
Okay.
Zach Robinson, I've seen a lot of people, you know, say they like, but I don't really know a ton about him.
Neither do I.
Bill O'Brien, I'm happy he's in the mix. I don't know if there's any Nathaniel Hackett fans out there, but I hope he doesn't enter the mix here. He is in the mix of the Jets OC job. Frank Reich, I'm all set on. I don't know who George Godsey is. As we're running through names here, Adam Gase is, you know, not enough of a sure thing for me. I don't really know how I feel about him.
Mm-hmm.
And Chad O'Shea, I mean,
wouldn't be the worst, but
wide receiver coach and passing game coordinator in Cleveland this past year. Cleveland was kind of a nightmare outside of the running game at times.
Yeah.
Not like a nightmare, but I think they definitely underachieved.
See, that's what worries me. Again, sorry to cut you off.
No,
that's what kind of worries me about Nick Caley. I know obviously knows the system, but we just talked about it. Tight end coach and the tight ends were not that good this year. So do you trust him running the entire offense? Again, like he knows the system and a guy that maybe probably should have gotten a chance last year. Again, getting screwed over by having Patricia come here. So I'm kind of on the fence with him. I don't really know how to – I don't know if you had any other kind of thoughts on him potentially, or I know we talked, like I said, a little bit about him, but –
my big thing I think I gather about Nick Caley is he's one of those guys that comes along every offseason, you know, starting last year. It's like, oh, he's this young up-and-comer. I think he falls into that category. But, you know, it's one of those things you don't know if he's actually going to prove to be an up-and-comer until, you know, you see what he can actually do. So true. I'm kind of lukewarm on Nick Caley, but I have sung his praises because of these up-and-comer, like, you know, this distinction he has, so I'm willing to give him a chance. But you know, if he's not the guy, I'm not, you know, gonna lose sleep over it. But
fair enough.
Seems like he could be an okay option.
Mm-hmm. Then you had some other guy or some other news too that broke today. I don't know if you want to touch on the other guys that have come out. I saw the Keenan McCardle one. Did not see the other two names or the other name that you mentioned that you have in the outline. Anything on either one of those two guys?
Yeah, I like Keenan McCardle. I mean, he works with Justin Jefferson. He's got to be, you know,
pretty good.
Somewhat intelligent.
Yeah.
And Adrian Clem, I didn't know this until Mike Reese tweeted out. Belichick's first ever draft pick with the Patriots. is interviewing for OC. He's the associate head coach, run game coordinator, and O-line coach at Oregon. And
okay, formerly
offensive line coach of the Steelers. And another note about McArdle, Chad Graff had this on Twitter saying that McArdle was so impressive in Minnesota that Kevin O'Connell kept him on staff after Mike Zimmer was fired, even though O'Connell had never worked with him. So and maybe he knew going into it. Taking the Minnesota job that we didn't, so that's a good vote of confidence from a guy that, you know, had a solid first year in Minnesota, you know, didn't end up how they would like, but I think mm-hmm. Kevin O'Connell did a solid enough job with that team.
Absolutely, yeah.
And yeah, like right now, I think McArdle and O'Brien are at the top of my list, with O'Brien, you know, being the more proven guy, I think, being number one.
Yep. Yeah, I've been preaching for Bill O'Brien since, you know, we reached the halfway point, I think, in the season, and we kind of figured out what this Patriots team is going to be under Matt Patricia and everybody. Bill O'Brien's my guy. Again, Kingsbury, I would have taken a chance on if he, again, wanted to coach football. He wasn't away from the game. But like you said, you know, listening to you, seeing some things on Twitter, Keenan McArdle wouldn't be the worst choice, I don't think. Again, because like you just said, with, you know, how well Minnesota looked this season on offense, kind of turning their season around or turning, you know, that offense around as a whole. So, of course, I'm sure plenty of names will come out. You know, we'll have more names as the season goes on. But right now, I think you and I and a lot of people kind of share the same thought that Bill O'Brien is the guy. Again, familiarity, Alabama, have that with Mac Jones as well. So that seems like a match made in heaven. I don't know if they've even interviewed him yet or begun the process. It's all kind of just up in the air, it seems like, right now. But I'm sure you share the same thought process as I do, that I think this, a lot of people just happy to finally see the Patriots. It seems like taking the initiative to go out and get a legitimate offensive coordinator after McDaniels leaves, you're left with nothing this season and how poorly things turned out.
Yeah. I'm glad they, you know, didn't wait to the off season to look into this and they drop it on us in like March or something. Mm-hmm. They're getting out ahead of this, hopefully. And, you know, hopefully it'll work out for the best. I do like the Alabama connection too, as I feel like a lot of people do with O'Brien. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the offense, a potential number one receiver the Patriots can acquire is one DeAndre Hopkins that Bill Belichick is on record as loving. That is the word.
Tends to work out well. You heard that with Hunter Henry in his free agent year, and look what happened. So
yeah, and Hopkins has some say in where he goes. So I see people worried about the whole offensive play structure, you know, scaring him off. I don't really think that's going to be much of an issue with a new face at OC. And I think Belichick is going to be enough for him. I really do.
The question, because I had this discussion the other day with a couple friends of mine. Obviously we just said it, we're high on Bill O'Brien to be the offensive coordinator. If you remember, things did not end well in Houston with DeAndre Hopkins and Bill O'Brien when he was the head coach there. That is the reason.
That's the thing too, yeah. That's
why he was traded out of Houston was the huge blow-up that those two had. If he's named the offensive coordinator, do you think that would sway Hopkins' decision to come to New England and more so be like, nah, I'm good, thanks for
it's reaching really out,
but no thanks.
It's really hard to say because, you know, having Bill O'Brien in a different role than head coach might be more appealing to Hopkins.
Okay.
Might just be bygones be bygones type scenario. Mm-hmm. I kind of doubt it, but you never know. But if they bring in a guy like McArdle, I don't really see why Hopkins would not.
Yeah, I wouldn't see a problem there, absolutely. If you had to pick one, DeAndre Hopkins is the new shiny wide receiver for the Patriots, or Bill O'Brien is the offense coordinator, what direction would you lean in?
DeAndre Hopkins.
Would you? Okay.
Yeah.
I
want him. I think he would give us the first true number one we've had in so long.
It's a fair argument. I'm torn between, I'm with you. I want Hopkins here no matter what it takes. I don't think it would take a lot, as we saw, of course, with that Houston trade back in 2020. All it took was a 2020 second round pick, a 2020 fourth round pick, and what turned out to be, I believe, unless he had a good year that year, I might be mistaken, but basically the corpse of David Johnson. Yeah. So I don't think he really did anything for that Houston team when he was acquired. Of course, the Cardinals got a fourth round pick as well in 2020. So, of course, speculation, what would it take to get DeAndre Hopkins? I saw a Sports Illustrated prediction just looking through Google and everything last night trying to get an idea. The prediction was New England sends a 2023 third round pick, 76 overall, a fourth round pick, 117th overall, and then a 2024 fifth round pick. Your thoughts on that? Too much? Just right? Or would you, I saw that and I'm like, if that's what gets it done, absolutely do that. I would do that 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, and I think, you know, combining him with a guy like McArdle versus, you know, potentially underwhelming at the receiver position to add and having O'Brien, I think I would take that trade off any day of the week with Hopkins and McArdle or absolutely some other good offensive mind. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. I want the under Hopkins. I think, you know, Belichick loves him this much. He's going to get him the ball a ton. This would be like the best, like pure, like number one threat receiver we've had since Randy Moss. So,
yeah, I don't definitely wouldn't argue that in the slightest.
Like, you obviously we had Julian Edelman for so long, but like Julian Edelman's not the same type of receiver.
Different style. Yep.
You got to think of the style here.
Mm-hmm.
DeAndre Hopkins would be a game breaker in this offset in this offense with Belichick, you know, having his golden boy and obviously him being a focal point. You know, if you're a new offensive mind in this staff, you're going to get your shiny toy, the ball, a lot. Mm-hmm, so absolutely. I have really no worries. I don't know why DeAndre Hopkins would, unless, you know, perhaps he didn't want to be with Bill O'Brien.
Yeah. Well, I'm everything you said and more right there with you. Like, this is the guy we've talked about it plenty of times. And there's definitely the eye test to back it up. You see quarterbacks going into their third year, young guys, Josh Allen gets Stephon Diggs. He's excellent. Why am I blanking on? There's another. You saw it with Tua this year, getting Tyreek Hill, of course, drafting Jalen Waddle helped him out a ton. We've said it numerous times, Mac Jones needs that guy, whether that's Hopkins or somebody else. I saw some people maybe say Pages should try to pry T. Higgins away from the Bengals because their contract situation might get a little scary, dude. Having to pay him, Burrow, Chase, Mixon might be coming up. I don't know if he was extended or not, but that situation could get dicey with, you know, cap and stuff like that. So Hopkins is my one. If for some whatever reason the Bengals want to trade T. Higgins, that would be my second option. I saw Keenan Allen's name get thrown around, which same thing. Could they pay him or not?
That won't happen.
No, I didn't think so either. But yeah, that two huge things I think the Patriots obviously should focus on. We talked about it. Good to see them getting out in front of the offensive coordinator stuff, and then potentially touching base with the Cardinals. Like you said, just hiring a former Patriot. Some inside workings there potentially on the horizon. So
Hopkins for a fifth and a sixth confirmed.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah, man, just give me DeAndre Hopkins, give me an offensive lineman, and give me Zay Flowers, BC legend in round two. And
all right,
we'll trot out Hopkins, Thornton, Myers, Flowers, and Kendrick Bourne next year and have people from Mac Jones throw to, and all will be fun.
And it'd be great. Get some protection for him too, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah, there we go. You know, just get a little Paris Johnson going in the first round, Peter Skoronski, one of those linemen, you know?
Perfect.
Help the boy out. Wild card round. 49ers and Seahawks got it started. The 49ers predictably beat the Seahawks 41-23. Brock Purdy looked a little shaky to start, but rounded into form and continues to instill hope in 49ers fans. You know, if he is the future, or at least the, you know, somewhat, you know, short-term future next year, or not, you know, they just, you know, want to feel comfortable in a seventh round quarterback, and he's giving them all the reason to be, and he carried the 49ers even after a rough start to the win, along with Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel being themselves.
Yeah, just another vintage Deebo playoff performance, 6-133 and a touchdown at 74 yard. I saw a lot of people call a screen pass, which it wasn't a screen pass. Like, I don't know why we consider it that. Christian McCaffrey, I think we talked about that. You know, he's going to be the guy I feel like they lean on in the playoffs just because they have so many weapons on offense. And then you don't really even have to have Purdy play that great. And you can still, I know the Seahawks, you know, people argued maybe shouldn't have been there with how the season ended for that, how they kind of played down the stretch, you know, not a overly great team by any means, but you know, Purdy didn't have to play great for the Niners to be able to beat the bag off of them. We talked about it before. The 49ers can win in multiple ways. You saw that on Saturday. Their defense stepped up when it needed to. Their offense just bludgeoned people to death. Like that's what this team is. That's why they're so scary. And again, we talked about it when I was texting you earlier. The fact that the Cowboys are favored, as we'll get to a little later in that. The fact that the Cowboys are favored against the Niners by ESPN's prediction kind of percentage stuff is mind-boggling to me, because the 49ers, I think, as I've talked about before, are probably the most complete team in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, on the flip side for Seattle, I mean, you have to be happy even with a first round loss. I mean, this Absolutely. Is a team that easily could have went like 3-14, maybe worse. And you play the playoff game, and you saw great production from your 2022 draft class. There's reason for hope, and you were out from under the, you know, shitstorm of Russell Wilson that we saw in Denver. I mean, you got to be happy if you're a Seahawks fan. So
you're out of that, and he got you a good draft pick. Like, yeah, you make the playoffs, you get a high draft pick. Like, nothing to complain about if you're a Seahawks fan.
Yeah, and you still have your own as well. So you have two first-round draft picks in the top 20. I believe the second one is 20th. The Denver pick is 5th. The Islanders just scored. That stinks. But yeah, I mean, San Fran expected to win, and they did. Took care of business. The most wild game of Wild Card Weekend was absolutely the Chargers and the Jaguars. I saw a video of a guy that literally took a nap after halftime. That was a Chargers fan, and he woke up to the demise of the Chargers. One of the worst losses you'll ever see in sports. I was ready to turn the game off in the second half, but
I did.
I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah,
I lost focus for a while, but I never fully turned the game off. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I didn't, because I was like, oh my God, 27-0. This is freaking bizarre.
Yeah.
But
I turned it off at halftime because I think the Bruins and the Celtics were both on that night. So I'm like, screw this. I'll watch both those teams. They're more competitive. This game's over. I was texting you during it. I'm like, Trevor Lawrence looks like last year's Trevor Lawrence, where he's just throwing the worst passes you've ever seen.
Three
the worst.
For 13 with three picks at one point.
Yeah. Oh, well, he was
four pick. Well, finishes with four picks. You can't lose to a guy that throws four interceptions.
No, well, that's what I mean. The Chargers win the turnover battle by a large margin, 4-0. And absolutely crumble in a huge spot.
We had a 4-interception performance and a 4-missed extra point performance.
Talk about a wild card weekend.
Yeah, it lived up to the name. It was a ton of fun this weekend. Not if you're a Chargers fan, though. The Jaguars took a victory lap on one TikTok user who was calling their offseason terrible and like why they're going to be bad this year. Then you have Zay Jones, who they committed to for a few years, Christian Kirk, who they threw all this money at, and Evan Engram, who I believe signed like a pretty lucrative 1-year deal, all get in the end zone and combined for like, what is that, like 260 something total yards? So
probably. I'm not going to do the math because I'm not good at math, but I'll take your word for it.
Last laugh on that guy. And I mean, they really have built something around Trevor Lawrence.
But yeah,
I will stand by my take unless things get bonkers here. I need to see it for a full season.
You know what? That's fair, because, like you said, the guy was
– I mean, he did start out with
– at one point had three completions and three interceptions. Like, he looked like he'd never played football before watching the start of that game. Yep. And
brain Trevor Lawrence is still there.
A clear-cut case, though, of, like, you could see first-time playoff jitters. Like, the guy was – a little nervous coming out of the gate, and then
so
just completely
Purdy
locked
too.
In. Yeah, absolutely.
Multiple guys.
Yeah, but that's expected. I mean, first playoff game, but I just don't get the Chargers, man. I mean, it's the same thing with the Buccaneers. You have great running backs, but you can't run the ball. Like Austin Ekeler, watching the beginning of the game, gets going, scores their first two touchdowns, has 5 rushes for 29 yards on the first 3 drives. The rest of the game, 8 rushes, 6 yards, 2 receptions, 8 yards on 4 targets. Like, the Chargers are such a stupid football team to me. I don't get why you have a 27-7 lead and you're still throwing the ball as much as you were. Like, you don't – I know Joshua Kelly had a couple of decent runs. Austin Ekeler, a lot of his second-half runs went in the wrong direction. But you have a mobile quarterback, too, in Justin Herbert. Like, you should be able to run the ball, kill the clock a little bit. Again, it just goes back to, I think, Brandon Staley is a complete moron. They fired the offensive coordinator – who someone's going to take the fall for it, I guess.
Receivers coach and linebackers coach as well.
Yeah, all gone. Yep. So I guess they'll take the fall for Brandon Staley being a moron. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I feel like until he goes, you're going to have the same situation with this team, because they're at this point, they're literally the Falcons of the AFC. Like, they find ways to lose games and uncharacteristic, because that's what they are, but just unfathomable ways. And again, it rears its ugly head on Saturday night. In an epic proportion. I think it was the third largest come from behind victory in playoff history. think that it was for the
right.
Yeah, yep. I have it in the outline. I don't know why I just couldn't find it. but yeah, Jaguars joined the Bills in 1993, coming back from 32 down, and the Colts, led by Andrew Luck in 2014, coming back from 28 down against the Chiefs.
That's insane.
And now no one is giving them any sort of chance on Saturday again versus the Chiefs this week. We'll get into that a little later, though.
That would be so funny to see them beat the Chiefs.
Oh, it would be awesome.
Yeah. Next up, we had Dolphins and Bills. Bills went 34-31 in an unexpectedly close game. Mm-hmm. Skylar Thompson had a terrible stat line, but made some decent throws. He finishes 18-45 for 221 pick. Two picks, one touchdown, and was sacked four times. I'm chalking a lot of this up to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle practically being non-existent in the first half.
Yep.
Jalen Waddle had three drops.
Hey, so he couldn't catch anything.
He couldn't do anything until the end of the game. Tyreek Hill, I mean, a guy you really never have to worry about drops, had one of the craziest drops I've seen all season, just right in his hands at one point. It was like probably like a 15-yard gain. I think Skylar Thompson was let down primarily in the first half, and I think, you know, a couple of those big plays converting could have made a big difference with the Dolphins. It doesn't, and you know it stings when you lose by 3 points. I almost said 3-0. but
really shitty playoff game.
Yeah, that would be pretty terrible. But you know, credit to the Bills as well. You know, they had their big guns ready to roll. Josh Allen threw two picks, but you know he managed to hit Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs for a combined 227 yards and a touchdown. They did enough to win. But I have to imagine, you know, the Bills are – we're going to see a different Bills team this weekend because they know, you know, if the Dolphins can keep it close with Skylar Thompson, the Bengals can absolutely do so and then some with Joe Burrow.
I was going to ask, is your confidence shit – because I don't know who you had – I can't remember who we did when predictions-wise, who you had coming out of the AFC. I don't know if it was Buffalo or Kansas City, but is your confidence shaking at all on Buffalo with a game like this? Because, I mean, if Miami doesn't have one of the greatest horrendous clock management meltdowns, moments, whatever you want to call it, in league history with how they played that final 2 minutes in the course of the delay game on the 4th-and-1, you know, you have Mike McDaniels is too busy smoking his joint or whatever the hell, or not joint, his jewel or his vape, yeah, on the sideline. Maybe the Dolphins pull that game out. Of course, you're going to give time with the ball back to Josh Allen. Anything can happen, but that game for a little bit of it was not trending in Buffalo's way. And I think the Bills have these moments where I feel like they kind of underestimate their competitors a little bit and maybe kind of sit back and try to just coast by to end games. Cause there were moments in this game where it's like, again, some poor decision-making. Josh Allen still bombing the ball downfield in certain moments where you're up. Like,
dude, he has the best deep ball.
He does. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to sound like I'm crapping on him, but like,
it's
just
so fun to watch.
It is. You're 100% right. But again, for me, it comes down to like, you're up. I know you can't run the ball, but again, you're a mobile quarterback. Run it with him. Like, get the first downs you need. Stop chucking the ball, giving Miami a chance to come back and win the game or tie the game or whatever. But I know I'm trying to drag this question out. Any shake in confidence in the Bills after a performance like this?
A little. Not a ton.
All right. Fair enough. What did you think of the end of the game for Miami? Just their decision-making process and that whole debacle of... It seemed like every play they got into the huddle, it was 3 seconds left on the play clock. They're trying to rush up to the line, trying to figure things out. I think they burned all their timeouts because they were avoiding delay game penalties in the second half. Like, that was Mike McDaniel getting exposed a little bit here. It feels like of maybe, again, playoff jitters here, not really knowing the situation. And it's crazy that this is what it kind of came down to in the end.
Yeah, I mean, rookie head coach wasn't built for the moment at the end.
No. Field Yates, I wanted to throw that out there too, because when I saw this tweet, it was crazy, talking about, the delay game. Field Yates saying what's crazy about that fourth down delay game is that the original play clock ran down to 14 seconds before the officials bumped it back up to 25 seconds. So Miami had 51 seconds to get the ball snapped and couldn't get it off in time. Like you said, talk about first game jitters for a head coach and just not being able to figure it out, because that was something, some sort of display there. I don't know what you want to call it. Just
verbal meme. The Tim Robinson episode when he's in the car and he says, "I don't know what any of this shit is, and I'm scared," while he's like half crying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've tough. If you're a Dolphins fan,
absolutely tough way to go out.
Next up, we have the G-Men and the Minnesota Vikings. The G-Men win 31-24. pulling off the upset. Daniel Jones, best quarterback of wildcard weekend, I think. Saquon Barkley gets to the end zone twice. Daniel Jones is a legit quarterback, and he proved that with his first career playoff win. I think this puts the stamp on it for me that, you know, I'm not going to say he's an elite quarterback, but I'm at the point where I think Daniel Jones is in the very good category. He's been good more than he's been bad this year. He's taken a big step. Brian Daboll has been huge for him. And the G-men are a threat. They're a threat against the Eagles coming up.
I had a brain fart because I think there's a certain quarterback in Dallas that maybe would, you could argue, had a better wild card weekend than Daniel Jones. I know Daniel Jones, don't get me wrong, was excellent all around. But
I'm giving him more credit going, you know, to Minnesota and winning versus, you know, beating a wounded duck Bucks team.
Okay, fair enough.
Prescott did. I'll give you that one. The edge.
All right. Yeah, I mean, like you said, he was great. Slung the ball all over the place, was running all over people. I mean, it was crazy to me watching that game that the Vikings couldn't. Like, we talked about it before. Their whole offense is Saquon running the ball and then Daniel Jones being able to use his legs. 17 rushes, 78 yards for Daniel Jones. 9 rushes. It's kind of crazy. They really didn't use Saquon on the ground much in this game because they didn't have to. Because like you said, Daniel Jones took this thing over. Isaiah Hodgins was great. He continues to break out in the second half of the season with 8 catches, 105 yards, and a touchdown. A
bruised foot. You see that picture?
Yeah, that was gross.
Yeah, I don't know how you play on that.
Mm-hmm. But then again, it comes down to the end of the game. You've late game situations. Idiot Kirk Cousins finally waits to show up in the last play of the game, deciding to throw a 3-yard check down on 4th and 8. So
that was insane to watch. That legitimately, like if my brain could spin like a top in my head,
that's what it would look like.
Just there, I was like in disbelief on my couch watching. It was just bizarre. But
I get going to your big tight end, but like maybe having him try to fight through some contact, but not 5 yards away from the first down marker. Like throw it
crazy
2 yards short and see if he can get by a guy. Not five. Like
I think we got to give credit to Adoree Jackson too. Justin Jefferson was just
absolutely he got locked down
for 37 yards when covered by Adoree Jackson. That's pretty
insane. Yeah. Yeah, but that was the thing too. Minnesota's, other than TJ Hawkinson, who had 10 and 129, the rest of their offense, Jefferson, 7 for 47. Dalvin Cook couldn't get anything going on the ground or in the air. Thielen has just 3 catches for 50 yards. KJ Osborne had their touchdown, 20 yards. I think Irv Smith mixed in the other touchdown in the air. So, like, none of the big hitters, it seemed like, for Minnesota really could get going other than Hawkinson. So, credit to the Giants for stepping up on both, you know, their offense and their defense because they played one of their more well-rounded games, I think, all season.
Yeah, definitely. Credit to the G-men, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. This game was closer than I thought it would be. Bengals and Ravens. Bengals win 24-17. And, again, it wasn't all that exciting, to be honest, which is, again, surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Burrow and the Bengals do enough to get it done, though. Wasn't the prettiest, but Sam Hubbard, I mean, you can't talk about this game without mentioning this. Yeah, the story of the game was Sam Hubbard. But like 12 minutes left, I think, Tyler Huntley tries to overextend like he's 6'8". Rookie mistake. Sam Hubbard makes him pay.
Well, do you blame Huntley for that, or do you blame – I kind of put the play calling
I would blame to blame. That on Huntley. Blame that on Huntley for overextending. You got to be smarter with the ball there.
Do you really think a quarterback sneak from the two – where was the two or the three? I think it was the two-yard line. Like, wouldn't you call it on the goal line? Especially, like, I feel like, Harbaugh is blaming everybody and their mother except for him because that's how he operates. But, like, I feel like that's on him to kind of know the situation. Like, you have a backup quarterback in there that – maybe doesn't run this a ton or isn't definitely hasn't been in a situation like that before in a playoff game. You know, you have obviously two good running backs and Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins that could have pounded that ball in. You're seeing Dobbins, you know, kind of be out talking about it. I put it on Harbaugh to not call a quarterback sneak from the 2-yard line. Yes, Huntley probably should have went into the pile instead of over. Like you said, don't extend in that situation like you're Josh Allen and you have that type of height. But it's just – to see that play call in that spot, I was dumbfounded by it because I'm like, you have plenty of other options. Throw a jump ball to Mark Andrews. You know, he looked like he was finally healthy and, you know, was contributing in that game. So to me, the play calling as a whole was weird in that situation.
Yeah, I think you could absolutely put some blame on Harbaugh there, but I can't get over extending there. It's too risky.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think you got to be a little safer there. Okay. But that was a huge turning point in this game. Like, you could honestly make the case, revisionist history, the Ravens might win that game if that doesn't happen.
It's trending that way.
They got the toxicity with, you know, the J.K. Dobbins comment. I don't think there was really any need for that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, it wasn't, you know, the best game for Huntley, but, I mean, he kept you within 7 points against a team you had no business being that close against.
No, I thought we both thought that game was going to be an absolute blowout.
Yeah, I think that shit is just lame.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you think it was a shot at Lamar maybe too, like a backhanded type of thing? Was like, because there's been a lot of people that have argued that maybe he's just sitting out because of the contract stuff and wasn't going to play because of that, and there wasn't really an injury. Obviously, we're not going to speculate on that, but that thought maybe crept into my mind a little bit that, you know, maybe he's kind of taking a shot at Lamar here, being like, if you got out here and played, man, we wouldn't have been in that spot. But I'm with you. Like, dude, you can think that all you want. Don't say that, especially right after you lose the game. Like you said, Huntley's not a guy that is been in that spot or is, you know, expected to do a whole lot in that spot. And the fact that he kept the game close is, I think, not obviously good enough as is. You want to win the game, but you know what I mean? Like, the fact that you were able to compete with the defending AFC champions with your backup quarterback in there is, I think, something to say a little bit.
Yeah, I suppose this game was definitely the least entertaining in my
absolutely
mind.
Oh, it was on too with I started watching The Last of Us right in the middle of it. It's mm-hmm. like I and then you yeah. come back and
multitasking.
Yeah, nothing really had changed in that game. It was close throughout, and then got back just in time to see the Hubbard scoop yeah. and score, and that was really the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, you can make the case that Bucks and Cowboys is kind of boring too, but at least, you know, Dak showed out, so there was mm-hmm. that to get excited about. True. Cowboys win 31-14 on the road. It's so weird to say on the road because of how bad the Bucks are, but, you know, that's just how, you know, division winners work mm-hmm. in the playoffs. You know, you get the home game in the first round. So Dak played very well, 25-33, 305 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks, 7-24, and a touchdown on the ground. This is the Brett Maher game, though. This is a close game. I mean, Brett Maher would be a pariah in Dallas and, you know, other surrounding areas of Texas that root for the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady threw the ball 66 times in this game.
Ridiculous, yep.
And just put up 14 points. That's just not good enough. I kind of don't know how Todd Bowles has a job. I know Byron Leftwich got fired, but I think Todd Bowles should be too. And I think firing Todd Bowles at this point is the only way you're getting Brady back if you're the Bucs.
Okay. I just think it's especially watching his press con. I don't know if you caught any of his press conference afterwards with the thanking the media and just kind of going on a spiel about them. Like, I took that as thanks guys for putting up with me. I'm out of here. Like, I'm going to go somewhere else because I just can't deal with this team anymore. I'm with you. I think Bowles should go after this. You have a horrible season, and then you just bow out in the playoffs in just an inept fashion. I wonder if as soon as Brady goes, do you get the report maybe that, oh, Bruce Arians is getting a little bit of an inkling to want to come back and coach, and maybe he makes the transition back to the field, and maybe that's something that happens. I don't know.
Remember that one game where Arians was on the sidelines and he had to be, like, told to, like, chill because he's like, dude, like, you're not with the team anymore.
Yeah. Yep. They had to like kind of hold them back. It's like, you're not making the decisions here. Like, it's up to Bowles and Leftwich and everybody. But I mean, I was a little surprised Leftwich got canned. I would have thought you move on from Bowles before that. Like,
because a pussy. How can you be that much of a pussy with Tom Brady?
I don't know. Well, I think that shows that we saw it with the Jets. He's just not a good NFL head coach. Like, guy has not had a ton of success. There's some guys that are just built to be coordinators. And I feel like he's more on that side of it than the Leftwich thing kind of just, it throws me. Cause wasn't he supposed like getting head coaching jobs last year, or was getting consideration for head coaching jobs? And then a year later you fire him. Like, maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else, but I thought there was some high praise for him in Tampa Bay. I mean, again, maybe it's the Patriots case where it's Brady doing most of the work, but him getting the can was kind of a crapshoot call there.
Yeah, I mean, I just think you got to do both if you're the
fair,
Bucks
yeah,
here.
Fair.
But not a super exciting game for, you know, anyone who might be wondering. I don't think this is Tom Brady's last game. I think
they're in the
same boat.
Nope. Where do you think, early prediction, where's he going?
If Tua retires, I think he will absolutely go to Miami, but I don't think Tua will retire unless he has to.
Mm-hmm.
I think he ends up in Vegas.
I do too.
Most likely.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of anyone else. The Carolina one's weird. Like, why would he want to play for Carolina?
I don't see that. I think
people might be connecting that to Sean Payton as well, if Sean Payton weren't to end up there.
If you're him, why would you want to coach? Like, that's the like.
I don't know. Just coach Tom Brady. Like,
go yeah, true, goes. I guess.
And, I mean, there's the Gronk stuff, too. So, you know, I think Gronk, if he's really serious about coming back, goes where Brady goes. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's another thing to follow in this storyline. But, I don't know. I'm leaning Vegas right now.
Yep.
Derek right Carr's out. You. Tom Brady's in. It would suck for Jared Stidham, but, I mean.
Yeah, that's true. you kind of forget about him. That would be
tough for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to.
That's the one that makes the most sense, though. You're comfortable with McDaniels. You have the top receiver in Adams. They bring Jay. I know Jacobs is a free agent. You bring him back. Like, as soon as Tom Brady goes there, you got to think, shit, I'll take a pay cut to play with Tom Brady. So you get something that they didn't have in Tampa Bay, which was a dominant run game. Because like you said, Brady throwing the ball 66 times in this game for a 45-year-old quarterback is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Like, and if you're the Raiders, man, you really got to build up that O-line in front of them. Because
yep.
Brady is not – you know, as comfortable taking hits as he, you know, he's never been like, you know, a guy like Joe Burrow, I think, who's like, is really unbothered by taking hits, it mm-hmm. seems. But like, you got to build that O-line for him. And I wonder if Brady comes if Josh Jacobs wants to stay, but I kind of doubt that. But
no,
we'll see. That's going to wrap it up for Wild Card Weekend. It was a good one. Can't really complain about too much. But on to the divisional round and the Jacksonville Jaguars, who will take on the number one seed, Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead, a daunting task for Trevor Lawrence and the boys of Duval.
Yeah, going to be tough. Obviously, just trying to think of keys to this game, thoughts, just stuff like that. Obviously, the big one is Kansas City coming off the bye. Is that going to make them sluggish at all? Probably not because of the Chiefs. Andy Reid gets guys prepared pretty well. For me, it's obvious Jacksonville's going to have to play probably, I'm not even going to say near a perfect game. They're going to have to play a perfect game to beat the Chiefs. You're not going to be able to turn the ball over four times and sneak away with a victory because the Chiefs aren't stupid. They're not the Chargers. They don't, you know, not capitalize off of dumb mistakes. So it's going to take everything that Jacksonville has. You're going to have to probably get a solid performance from Travis Etienne. He played pretty well in the wild card round. You know, the Chiefs at times have struggled to defend the run. So big game from Etienne. And then, like you said, for the wild card game, get those guys, those big offseason additions, Ingram, Kirk, Zay Jones are probably going to have to step up. And, you know, Trevor Lawrence is going to have to play obviously much better than he played in, you know, the first half and then the entire game, you know, put together a full four quarter effort instead of, you know, having to pull a miraculous comeback out of your behind.
Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to pick the Jaguars in this game.
I tried so hard, but I'm like, and then I went back. I forgot these two teams played each other. So, of course, a rematch of week 10, Chiefs beat the Jaguars 27-17. So a closer game maybe than I would have thought, or maybe people would have thought. I couldn't do it. It's the Chiefs. They're coming off a bye. Everything's pointing in their direction. They're at home.
I wanted to at least take them against the spread to go Jags plus 8.5, but I couldn't do it.
No.
Couldn't do it. I'm just going 38 all on the Chiefs, 23. Then. I'm taking 28-3. 38-23, geez, not 28-3. 38-23, Chiefs.
This is for me. I don't know how to take the Chiefs coming out of the bye week. I think the first round bye. Obviously, I think there might be maybe some rust. They might go into this game thinking we're playing the Jaguars, we're the Chiefs. We can just kind of sit back and coast to a win. So I think this game might come out closer than a lot of people think it's going to. I have 32-26 Chiefs in overtime. At first, I had that because I said this game's going to go into overtime. The Jags are going to come back in regulation. The game's going to go into overtime. The Chiefs are going to win the coin toss, walk right down the field and score a touchdown. But then I forgot. The overtime rules are different. The Jaguars would have a chance to answer that touchdown if it happens. But I think in the end, the Chiefs are going to, you know, too overpowered. You're probably going to see one of those vintage Travis Kelce's wide open down the field touchdowns in overtime, and the Chiefs are going to be able to hold on to pull off a win that's maybe going to be closer than it probably should have been.
I can see it, man. I'm a little.
I'm hoping not for like
coming off a high from that win.
Yeah, nothing against you. I'm hoping the game doesn't go as you predict because I don't want to see the Chiefs walk in and just blow doors off a team. And then everyone just, oh, the Chiefs are just, they're so far better than everybody else. They're a lock for the Super Bowl. Like, you know, that's going to be what comes out of this game is the Chiefs dominate and they're, you know,
I would like to see now and Patrick Mahomes lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars and play bad. Mm-hmm. So we just don't have to listen to people ball wash him all offseason.
People will find a way still. I'm sure they will. It's just how it is now. You get the idiots that think they're already better. He's already better than Brady. They're already better than the Patriots in their heyday. Like I'd love that too. Just shut everybody up right then and there. You know, the Chiefs lost in their first playoff game of the season to the Jaguars, but it's such a tough task. I don't think it's gonna be the case, unfortunately.
I don't either. Another one, I want to pick the underdog is Giants and Eagles, but I did too
in this one. Yep.
6 seed G-men versus the 1 seed Eagles. The line is Eagles -7.5. Over under is 48. This game, obviously, is going to come down to how much Daniel Jones can take it over.
If the
Giants want any chance, because with that, you know, lackluster receiving core at any point, you know, they cannot be enough. The Eagles can overwhelm them with their potent offense and, mm-hmm. you know, more often than not, pretty solid defense. The Eagles know how to beat the Giants. They've done it twice this year.
Yep.
And I think they will do so again.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. This, for me, comes down. The only question for the Eagles is how much did the bye. Again, it comes down to the bye being the 1 seed. You know, how much did that help Jalen Hurts? Is he fully healthy going into this game? Is he still kind of banged up? And can the Giants take advantage of that? Because you saw, you know, week 18, obviously they weren't playing for anything, but the Giants put up a fight 22-16. That week 14 game, it was all Philly, 48-22. I think Miles Sanders had 2 rushing touchdowns in that game. Hurts factored in with a couple of touchdowns on the ground. Philly's been able to run all over them in the 2 matchups they've had. So that's the big thing for me is can the Giants, they limited, again, Dalvin Cook in that matchup last week. Can they do it again this week against the Eagles? That's a much tougher task because the Eagles obviously pride themselves on their ability to run the ball. I'm with you. I wanted to pick the Giants as an upset because I think it's so tough to beat a team 3 times in a season. But it's just the Eagles are a better team all around, better defense, better offense. And, you know, I'd like to see, like you said, Daniel Jones be able to stick right there with them. But if the game ends up being a shootout, I just don't see how the Giants offense is able to keep up with Philadelphia's.
Yeah, and these are – both of these games are involved the 2 teams left that I dislike the most. So I would love to be wrong on both of these. Next up, we have what should be the best game.
Did we say our score prediction? Sorry for the...
Oh, did? Oh, shit.
I don't think we did. No.
I'm going 38-20 Eagles, and it pains me to do that.
Absolute blow. You got 2 blowouts to start, which I don't like. I'm sticking close. 27-18 Eagles. Like I said, their offense is just going to be able to suffocate the Giants. Or the defense, rather, is going to be able to suffocate the Giants.
Yeah, I think Jalen Hurts, the potential for a statement game is there, and I think we see it. Bills and Bengals. Bills at home in this one. Maybe some, you know, unfinished business with, you know, the game that was never able to be finished because of the DeMar Hamlin situation. This game is going to be insane.
Going to be the best game of the weekend by far.
The line is Bills -5.5, over under 48. I went so back and forth in this one, as I feel like everybody is, and it's going to be so fun. I can't fucking wait.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I did not go back and forth. I stuck with this. I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago, or just mentioned it in passing. I think the Bengals are playing pissed off. I think there's some merit behind them. I think maybe thinking they've been counted out in these playoffs with everyone already talking about, you know, if it's Bills and Chiefs in the AFC Championship game, it's in a neutral site. There was a lot of talk of that. No one really mentioned the Bengals. You obviously have a stinker game for the Bengals for the most part. You're just being able to beat the backup-led Ravens. I think the Bills, like I said, maybe got exposed a little bit in that Dolphins game, thinking that, you know, they're the Bills that can just walk through things. To me, it comes down to which one of these 2 teams makes the least dumb mistakes, or, you know, doesn't make the painstaking or backbreaking mistakes. Buffalo, you saw it in that game. Josh Allen had 2 bad picks, maybe, you know, one of those balls was tipped. But I think when it comes down to it, Allen's, I think, more prone to make the dumb interception and the bad turnover than Burrow is. So this is my one upset of the weekend. I have the Bengals beating the Bills 33-30, maybe a last second field goal or a last second maybe touchdown drive for Joe Burrow. And it's the one game I have different from you. Like I had last week with the Giants game. Everything else has been the same except for this one.
Yeah, this is the one game we differ. I'm going Bills 36, Bengals 33 in overtime.
All right.
Give me an overtime game this weekend, damn it. I need it, please.
There's always one or two, so I think you're in, maybe in for one here.
I
definitely could see it.
Oh, excuse me. The final game of divisional round weekend is Cowboys and 49ers. Cowboys travel to San Fran. The line is 49ers minus 4. Over-under is 46. I think that over should hit fairly easily. This has got to be like right there, if not close to like being the game that everyone probably expects to be the best game of divisional round weekend, but I got to give it to Bengals and Bills.
Mm-hmm.
This one should be really fun though. You know, the Cowboys put a statement out there, beat Tom Brady for the first time. This could be a crazy game.
Bengals and Bills to me has a chance to be the best offensively played game, just high flying back and forth all night long and maybe into overtime as you have in your prediction. This one I feel like could be not boring, but like nitty gritty defense. Someone's, you know, going to have a pick six or a scoop and score. Again, like you saw in the Bengals game to win this game, because obviously two very good defenses, you can make a case, the two best defenses in football going at it. You saw the Cowboys obviously shut down Brady and the Bucks. Maybe not the toughest thing to do, but obviously the Niners, way more weapons. Definitely not as an experienced quarterback, so there's obviously that factor with Purdy. So that's kind of the big thing for me. Can the Cowboys make Brock Purdy look like a rookie and shake him a little bit? Can the Niners, they're probably going to have to lean on Christian McCaffrey or get Debo going in the run game. Can they do that against a pretty good run defense in the Cowboys? It's going to be tough. I think the 49ers will pull it out, though, 26-23 on a last-second, you know, gut punch field goal to send the Cowboys home. All this hype for the Cowboys after this huge win, first road win and whatever it was, 30-plus years, that's all going to come crashing down this week.
Crashing and burning down to the ground.
Down to the ground.
I am going 49ers 34, Cowboys 24.
Got a lot of big scoring games this week. I like it.
I do. I a lot love of the offense. Points. I love the points.
Points, points, points.
Go over in every game.
All right. We'll see.
I love overs this week if I were a betting man.
Yes, you do.
Should be fun, though. Really good matchups. Can't really complain about any of them, to be honest with you.
No, that's the big thing, too. Like, I know we always we root for the underdogs a lot of the time or some of the time. But like these are the matchups you wanted to see. Like, I know from a Brady fan standpoint, we probably wanted the Bucs to win that game against the Cowboys. But, you know, do you really want to see the Buccaneers play the 49ers? Like, if that was the case, like, no, that game would have stunk. The Dolphins, maybe they upset Buffalo. Do you want to see the Skylar Thompson-led Dolphins go into Kansas City? Like, no. So you got the best matchups you possibly could out of all these. Maybe not with the Jags winning. I'm sure people would have rather seen Chargers in the second round. But, you know, the Chargers, again, as we talked about, have not been the brightest team on the planet this season. So, yeah. Who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe people would have rather seen the Vikings as well. But I think a storyline of the third time with the Giants and the Eagles this season is something. Obviously, division rivals. There's maybe some hatred for those two teams against each other. You're getting good storylines. You're getting good matchups. So nothing to complain about there when it comes to this week of football.
Certainly not. I think you said it quite eloquently.
Thank you. I try. Doesn't always come out the way I want it to. But in the end, happens. As long as I get my point across.
Exactly. On to the Bruins next. It's status quo. You know, it was a tough loss to Seattle to start. It's one of those games where you simply get outplayed.
They had to have one eventually.
But I mean, Omark played really good. He only let in 2 goals and 30 shots, and you just got outplayed. That's really all it is. Nothing to really worry about. Seattle has really taken a step forward this year after a tough inaugural season, but they did bounce back, beating the Maple Leafs in heartbreaking fashion, as they do so often. 4-3 with a late goal from Matt Grizzlick, of all people. Mm-hmm. Omark, not his best in this one, 18 saves on 21 shots, but this is a game we saw some fisticuffs. We saw one of the, we were both talking about this, the longest fights you'll ever see in the NHL
insane.
These days. Yep. They let Foligno and Simmons go for what felt like probably like a minute 15 seconds. It just never felt like it was going to end. I wish they would do this more. It was a great game, a little bit of a playoff atmosphere, and, you know, a good precursor for, you know, who's on, you know, what level in this matchup going forward. As well, you know, there's a good chance we see it in the playoffs yet again. And then we had the Philadelphia game, a 6-0 win, a trouncing. I couldn't believe that the Flyers had won 7 of the last 10 coming into this because this team is just so bad.
They blow. That game was never close.
Yeah, we'll talk about them for another reason with Moments of the Week to wrap the show up. But yeah, Jeremy Swayman, first shutout since February of last year. 29 saves in this one. Just completely dominated them. I thought Carter Hart got hurt, but he got pulled just for letting out 4 goals and 16 shots. We saw the 23-year-old prospect goaltender Samuel Ersson come in. Played solid outside of the couple goals he let up. Krejci, 1,000th game is the story in this one, though. I had 3 assists. Zacha was fantastic at one of the craziest goals of the year that, you know, the pipe ringing, that sound is just one of the best sounds in hockey. As the Bruins just scores, we're talking about them scoring.
McAvoy with a bomb.
Yep. Matt Grizzlick, 5 points in the last 4 games, kind of sneakily.
He's on a heater.
Yeah, the Bruins are playing pretty well. It's a tough first against the Islanders tonight, not their best. But as Ryan just alluded to, Charlie McAvoy just sent one home from the point with a little point hammer action. Anyone who knows me knows I love a good point hammer here and there. Maybe another point for Matt Grizzlick here.
Yeah, he got the initial assist, I think. Yeah.
There's another one. He's hot. He's putting up points. Point hammer, easy one-timer. So free for Charlie McAvoy. But yeah, shout out to Krejci. I mean, just a guy. I think one of the things he had to have been looking forward to this year coming back was hitting 1,000 games. The 7th Bruin to do so. In franchise history, it's a pretty elite group. He's getting closer and closer to Phil Esposito for 5th all-time in assists. That's pretty insane given how dominant Phil Esposito was back in the day. Yeah, the Bruins, I mean, what else can you say? They're just really good. They're the best team in the league. They have
how it's been all season. Sounds like a broken record at this point. You know, I've been saying that, I feel like, a lot of the times we talk about the Bruins, but that's just what it is. Like, I said it to you right before, you said it as well, right before we jumped on here. Like, the only negative thing is, what, the DeBrusque injury? Like, and again, the one outlier Seattle game where they played bad, like I said, you're bound to have one of those. The fact that it came on January 12th, however many games that is into the season, 43, 42, whatever the math is, is incredible.
43 games and 44 tonight.
All right, so it's incredible how well they've played. The fact that, you know, you look at the standings and their record is currently the 5 losses as we sit here in the middle of January is insane.
Yeah, it's really nuts. They do have the Islanders as we speak right now. Matt Barzal is leading them in scoring this season, 41 points in 44 games. They pretty much just trot out the exact team every year. Same style, similar roster, but one thing I did want to note, they do have William DeFour in the lineup tonight making his NHL debut. I think one of the most fascinating prospects out there. A 5th-round pick in 2020, had 116 points last year in the QMJHL, 55 goals and 60 assists with St. John's. He's a big forward. He can score. He's 6'2", 216, has 13 goals and 12 assists in the minors this year in 37 games. And he's playing with Matt Barzal and Josh Bailey tonight. Maybe this is the type of guy that the Islanders need, because I really don't feel like they have a pure scorer on their team, and maybe William DeFour can be that guy. Hudson Fashing's been a good addition as well. He's kind of come out of nowhere, been a pleasant surprise for them. But they're pretty much the same Islanders team until they prove me otherwise. They trot out very similar rosters. They have a very similar slow, methodical style, even under a new coach this year. Pretty much the same for them. Then you get the Rangers on the road, little New York swing here. Coming up tomorrow night, so back-to-back. Artemi Panarin is pacing them on the score sheet. They're 3rd in the Metro. Panarin's got 47 points in 45 games. They're turning things around. It was a weird start to the season for the Rangers, and it's funny. A lot of Rangers fans will point to the fact when Jacob Trouba had that meltdown in that Chicago game, things have really changed since then, so maybe that was the wake-up call they need. this is a better team than they showed in the first half or so of the season. So, you know, maybe they'll go on a run here and take over the Metro Division. Should be a good test for the Bruins and the Rangers likewise. San Jose Sharks, we saw 2 weeks ago, pretty bad. A team that's going to be a seller. Looking for 3 first-round picks for Erik Karlsson. Good luck with that. Especially with how good the 2023 draft is, and probably 2024 and 2025 from the early outlooks there. It looks like we're going to get some really stud draft classes coming up the next few years. So good luck trying to get picks in that draft. They're also willing to retain only 18% of that $11 million a year.
So no budge whatsoever.
So, yeah, it's a tough sell if you're Mike Greer to other GMs, especially as a first-year GM. You don't have a ton of leverage, so good luck to him. Sharks are bad. This should be a win. And then you go to Montreal, play another bad team in the Montreal Canadiens. Nick Suzuki's just got 37 points in 45 games. They're not scoring a lot. Goaltending's not great. Defensive depth is not great. But shout out to Jonathan Kovacevic, who has seemingly carved out a top six role for himself after being claimed off waivers. So shout out to him. Mm-hmm. Sucks it has to be with the Canadiens, but
yeah, I know, right?
You got to stick where you can stick. It starts, you know, with some tough opponents, but the rest of the stretch leading into, you know, midweek next week and our next episode should be pretty easy for the Bruins. So I am expecting them to keep the ball rolling.
Yes, as am I. A lot of winnable games in the schedule, including tonight. Like you said, yep. That Rangers game will be a good test, seeing that they've turned things around and look like the team they were supposed to at the start of the year when we were, you know, high. I can't remember where we had them in our preseason predictions, but I think you and I both had them as making pretty lengthy playoff runs.
Yeah, and something I just remembered about the Rangers, they are getting Chris Kreider back in the lineup for the game against the Bruins.
Known Bruins killer, so.
Yep.
That's not great.
We shall see what happens. Pavel Zacha was inked to an extension right after the Maple Leafs game. Like,
quite literally right after, I think. It was like the game, let's say, ended at like 10:15. The news came out at like 10:17. Very bizarre, but I'll take it.
Had to have been intentional. But
you would think, yeah.
As you have noted here, his first game out of the extension, 3-point night, 2 goals and an assist. He's had a pretty good year. I think 4.75 is maybe a slight overpay, but I don't know. I was expecting something like 4.25 if he gets an extension, or 4.5. So nothing too crazy in my mind. I think, you know, 3.5 was a slight underpay. You can make the case that he got this year, but I think 4.75 is a reasonable dollar for him. $19 million over the course of those 4 years. So they got him locked up through 26, 27. Really no qualms with this. He's starting to score a little more. We saw that in the Flyers game. So maybe, you know, that'll be an added, you know, bonus these next few months of the regular season and beyond. But the player they have in Pavel Zacha, I think, is, you know, I think 4.75 is fine for him. And a 4-year term, you're not committing this huge period of time for him. So I love it. And I really don't have any problems.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I think we talked about him either last show or 2 shows ago, where we brought up the point talking about him was like, you know, he had been, I think, struggling to, you know, obviously not putting the puck in the net, but he was doing other things. So he's not like one of those guys where it's like, oh, Zacha sucks because he's not doing, you know, he's not producing in any way, shape, or form. He's still getting other guys involved, still playing really good defense. So yeah, I'm fine with it. You know, he's a guy that, again, is not going to light up the stat sheet on a nightly basis, but does a lot of things well. And seems to fit their system really well. So I'll 100% take it. He gives you a known, I'm trying to word this where it doesn't sound stupid. He gives you a known in the future. Obviously, you don't know what's going to happen with Pastrnak. You don't know what's going to happen down the line with Bergeron and Krejci from the year-to-year basis. So this is a guy, obviously, good to see him with some tenure now, and is going to be here for a while, a guy that, you know, fits the system and has played pretty well in his first season here.
Yeah, and it's a guy that when he was here, he was excited. He's lived here in the past. Wants to be here, so it works for everybody, I think. And the Bruins just scored again.
I don't know if Krejci got that or Forsberg. The Bruins might have 2 defenseman goals tonight.
Can you imagine if it was Zacha?
That would have been hilarious. Yeah. That would have been
funny. He is on the ice, but it looks like it's Forsberg, given the camera panning to him after they're breaking out of the celebration here. It looks like we got 2 defenseman goals here. Pastrnak was on the ice. He is the next guy on our agenda. As the Bruins and him are making progress on an extension, we saw Elliot Friedman Saturday night talk about how they were making progress, and Darren Dreger on TSN's Insider Trading on Monday followed it up with, you know, much of the same little one tap backdoor for Derek Forward there. Good pinch. Kind of building on what Friedman said and adding the fact that they're closer than they were a couple weeks ago. See, the thing with that for me is, like, they're closer than they were a couple weeks ago, and then you have Pastrnak almost putting up three hat tricks in, like, four games.
Yeah. Oh, that's what we talked about it all season. The longer this goes on, the worse it's going to get because he's playing himself into a larger and larger contract. Like,
it's going to be...
He kind of made that bed, now laying it. Like,
at this rate, it's going to be like that every week. It's like, oh, they're making a little progress, and they're making progress because they've had to maybe...
Pastrnak just got named player of the week again, or was the first star this week.
$250K a year, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Not great.
You're looking, I will be shocked if this deal is under $12 million a year.
Yeah, I was going to say 12 is probably the base point because, again, it's not like he's taking dips where it's like, oh, he went this week without putting up any goals, had maybe an assist or two, didn't look all that great. Every week, it's like you said, it's a hat trick, it seems like every other night, or two goals every other night,
yeah.
A hat trick here and there. You know, he's scoring a game-winning goal, is obviously great in the power play per usual. Like, and it's more the same from him. And like I said, we've talked about it all season. The longer you wait on this, the worse it's going to be for Don Sweeney if you don't want – if he maybe thinks he can get Pastrnak on some sort of discount, I think that ship has completely sailed. Like, you're going to have to pay this guy what he's worth. And then some.
Yeah, and for anybody who might be worried about him becoming the most highest played player in the league, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think
he knows the market, I feel like.
I think we're looking at 10.5 minimum, more so 12 minimum. But maybe somewhere in the middle, 11.5. Anything around there is fine. Give him a blank check. This has been the message from us and tons of people out there for a while. Blank check, get it done. Mm-hmm. You got Zach out of the way. Get Pasta done, then you can worry about Frederick and Swayman in the offseason when you need them, Bergeron, Krejci, Foligno, whoever. If you want to bring Foligno back, that's an offseason priority. Just get it done now.
Yep.
But speaking of wingers, we had an interesting tweet from Brad Marchand last night. Ian McLaren had tweeted out, you know, a hypothetical Bruins top nine if they were to get Puljujarvi, who was healthy scratch the other night, been a, you know, subject of trade talks for much of this season. Falling out of favor, it seems, in Edmonton, and, you know, they're going to have a cap crunch, so moving his $3 million could really help them. I am personally not in the camp where I feel like we need Jesse Puljujärvi. Would I take him for a cheap price? Absolutely. But Marchand tweeted, like, the shh emoji in response to those four lines, including Puljujärvi.
What do you know, Brad Marchand?
What does he know? Or he's like, nah, we're good. NHL Insider quoted it with an eyes emoji. So maybe that's Chris Johnson saying, oh, like, this is a little spicy from Brad Marchand. Or maybe it's eyes emoji like, yeah, there is something to this. Mm-hmm. The Bruins are talking to the Oilers about Jesse Puljujärvi. I'd be okay with it, but I just don't see it happening. I see him ending up somewhere like Buffalo or Carolina, if I had to guess. I don't know. It's kind of hard to get a read on what Marchand is cluing at here with the shh emoji. What do you think? I'm on the side that he's like, nah, we're good.
Yeah, I mean, I know nothing about the player, so as you were talking, I had to go look up his stats and
he's also not playing good this year. So
that's what I mean. Yeah. Again, I know you're not a huge plus-minus guy, so whenever I bring that up, I bring it up with a grain of salt, but, like, the minus 13 sticks out to me. The 10 points in 45 games, not great. I mean, I'm not huge on them. Like, DeBrus is going to come back, so I'm not huge on them being like, you have to go out and get, like, a Patrick Kane type of guy or, like, light the world on fire here. Like, a minor move is what I would lean towards for them, but looking at this guy's stats, I'll pass. No, thanks. So I'm with you, Brad Marchand. No, thank you.
Yeah. Go away. I really do like Puljujärvi when he's on top of his game. He had a much better season last year. He's a former fourth overall pick. I'm cool with Jesse Puljujärvi this year. I don't really think they need a forward addition, period.
Okay.
Maybe a depth piece. Maybe he is like a good third line piece they could add, but I don't know. Right now, I don't know why they would make a trade right now. I think, you know, if they're going to make a move, it's going to be at the deadline. Move could also be in the form of Luke Shen. They do have interest in Luke Shen. I really don't. I mean, it's a guy with some playoff experience, a guy that blocks shots, hits. I'm fine with the defense.
And if you need reinforcements, you have Mike Riley, you have Anton Strahlman, you have Jakub Zboril, and Jack Hachan. That's plenty of options.
That's the thing with this team. I don't see
a scenario where the Bruins have to shell out for an asset this year.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you. That's the thing with this team. It's like, obviously, we've heard it before where guys go, or teams go into the trade deadline. And if, you know, I don't want to cross sports, but like the Red Sox, you saw it last year where it's like guys wanted the trade or wanted to move me because they thought it would like re-energize the clubhouse, stuff like that. You always hear players talk about that. So like there's always the risk of if you're in a position like the Bruins are in and you don't make a move, you know, does that send some sort of message to the clubhouse or the locker room? But like you said, like where exactly is the biggest need for this team? Like you said, it's mainly just depth, and you kind of you have that in the system, especially like you said with the defenseman. Like, I mean, Mike Riley, that's not the flashiest name. You know, Zboril doesn't have the biggest, you know, supporting when it comes to fans. You know, it's, again, not a huge name. But like, yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, I don't know what they would want to trade and who they would even trade for that would like make a huge difference. It's not like they have like, oh, this team desperately needs a third line left wing or a number two defenseman. Like they have all these things. So
they're good.
Yeah. And this is as complete as they've been.
The cap too. When DeBrusque comes back. That's the problem too.
Yep.
And you're not going to have an easy time getting rid of a guy like Craig Smith or getting rid of Mike Riley's contract. So I think the best thing for the Bruins is to stick with this group and maybe get a depth forward. Like it's a really cheap depth forward at the deadline. That's where I'm at. Yes, Puljujarvi's not that type of guy. He makes $3 million. He's struggling. Do you want to have a reclamation project in the midst of a really good nucleus? I don't think you should.
Yeah, because then it comes down to who do you take out of the lineup for a guy like that? Like you have guys that are all playing pretty well. I know like Craig Smith's probably the obvious answer if you could move him. But like you said, it's going to be tough to. Like anybody else, there's really nobody on this lineup I would like want to take out because everyone, like you said, seems to be working pretty well together. These lines have been good throughout the entire season. There really hasn't been any weak link on any of them. So, I'm with you. I go get a depth guy that, you know, maybe has some tenure, maybe a veteran guy that has some more postseason experience just to help out in that department. Other than that, like I'm not, like you said, breaking the bank for anything big.
Nope. I don't think Puljujärvi will break the bank, but I don't think this is a team that needs to make that move. I think we're good to segue into some quick moments of the week thoughts before we wrap up the show. Mine was from last night. Ivan Provorov making Flyers Pride Night at the arena about himself, setting his religious beliefs for his reason to not wear a Pride jersey for 15 minutes in warmups, when other Russian players have had no problem doing so.
Maybe it's just me, but I don't know. This is maybe going to sound terrible, but part of me always feels like the religious belief thing is somewhat of a cop-out.
Yes, it is.
Like, okay, I'm glad you're with... Good, I'm glad we're on the same page.
In this case because there has to be other players in the NHL that are like, you know, this doesn't really line up with my religious beliefs either, but they suck it up for 15 minutes.
Yeah, they do it.
It doesn't mean you support gay marriage or anything like that under that umbrella. It shows that you are comfortable wearing a jersey for 15 minutes that supports the LGBTQ2S+ community and the people in that community who support you and pay money to go to your games, buy your jerseys, whatever. All it does is bring awareness to their community and make them feel welcome in the arena and in the community of the fan base. Everybody else in your team did it besides you. You made it about yourself. And the funny thing is, too, he's got his dog's Instagram account resharing photos of Gritty with a pride flag. Like, dude, okay, come on.
Read the room, know the situation. Like,
it's just
be less tone deaf, all the above.
And they play, and the Flyers played him. And guess who led the Flyers in ice time?
Probably him. That's a bad look for the Flyers. That's not great.
And if you're the Islanders, that was a guy you could potentially trade, and now I don't imagine he has much.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I can't imagine that trade value took a pretty big hit, and I can't imagine most teams are going to be calling for a guy his caliber now.
Yeah, like, you just don't.
You said it's a warm-up jersey, right? That's what it is.
Jersey.
So it's not like you're. And again, I'm not defending it, but like it's not like you're wearing it the entire night. You wear it for what, 10 minutes before the game?
Yeah. You were in a warm-ups. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Yep.
And especially when you have, I don't have all the details in front of me, but I think it's Scott Laughton and like James Van Riemsdyk just made this big pledge to an LGBT like fundraiser or something. Mm-hmm. And then you have Ivan Provorov
putting a complete damper on the thing,
doing crap like this and making it about himself, and John Tortorella defending him. Like,
well, that doesn't surprise me either. Like, we talked about the headache that having him as the head coach was going to potentially cause with that team. So, like,
yeah. December 2nd, 2022, Flyers players Scott Laudon and James Van Riemsdyk founded the Flyers Pride Initiative. Throughout the season, they are hosting members of the LGBTQ plus community, gifting them with their own Flyers Pride gear and welcoming them for a post-game meet and greet. If guys in your team doing that, then you have guys like freaking Ivan Provorov who can't wear a jersey for 15 minutes. Like, what a
bad
joke.
Look.
What a joke. A bad real look bad for look. For the biggest train wreck of an organization in the league. It's just, mm-hmm. It's so pathetic. It's so lame, and it's just embarrassing. It really is.
Yeah, I think you summed it up good. Like, I got nothing else to add. I'm right there with you. Like, it's such a, again, I come back to it. It's such a dumb excuse of a reason. Like you said, just suck it up. Whether you agree with it or not, wear the thing for the 15 minutes you got to wear it, and then like, just be done with the situation. You don't even have to make a comment about it either. It's like, you can just do it, get it over with, and then be done. Like, but nope, this is, like you said, you make it about yourself. And
yeah, and then the NHL comes out and says hockey is for everyone, is pretty much to say it's a blanket statement, and players are entitled to do things like this as they want. Like, fuck off, dude. It's like,
no, that's not
it's wearing a jersey either. For 15 minutes. Your life will be okay. Like,
life will go on. The sun will rise tomorrow.
Yeah, so stupid.
Yeah.
A more positive moment of the week, depending on how you feel about the player,
is the yeah, latest, and the team.
The latest addition to the Red Sox, not the flashiest the last couple of years, but a guy that I've liked in the past, yep. A guy that is, you know, about a year or two removed from a really good season. And I'm fine with the addition is Adam Duvall, formerly of the Braves, I should say.
Yeah, they get him, World Series winner a couple years ago with those Braves, signed a one-year, $7 million deal today with incentives that can boost a deal to $10 million. I'm with you. It's a player I've liked. It's a player, it seems like really for the first time that the Red Sox have been linked to, that they reportedly were heavily linked to and heavily wanted and finally got. And it's, frankly, it's a guy they desperately might be too strong, depending on how you think the season's going to go. You and I are not high on this season, of course, if you listen to the show. But to me, it's a guy you had to go out and I'll say it, desperately get. This team, as we talked about, you know, with Devers in the lineup and really just Devers, who is going to protect him? Who is going to be that extra power bat to go with him? Duvall is going to be that guy. They needed a right-handed hitting outfielder to go along with Verdugo and Yoshida and Duran. You know, if he's going to platoon in center field, which you have to think he's probably going to, Duvall is that guy, right-handed hitted power bat. You can stick him in the middle of the lineup. He mashes at Fenway Park, had the 3-homer game in the COVID year a couple years back. Plays pretty good defense. He's probably going to be your center fielder, your starting center fielder, which means Kike is going to probably be in the infield somewhere, whether that's short or second. That'll depend on if they go out and get a shortstop or go out and maybe get a guy like Iglesias or I saw Josh Harrison's name come up again, or Elvis Andrews.
I saw Andrelton Simmons, I think, as well.
Oh, I didn't see that. I wouldn't hate that move. Good defender.
I saw someone say Simmons, and I figured it was him unless there's another Simmons I don't know about.
Not that I can think of. That's a shortstop. No, I got nobody. But, yeah, I mean, again, like you said, it depends on how you think of the player. Duvall, not a great season last year, just a .213 average in 86 games, 12 homers, 36 RBIs. You mentioned it. They're obviously trying to get back to where he was 2 years ago when he played in 146 games, had 38 home runs, 113 RBIs that I believe led the National League and won a gold glove in the outfield as well in a split season between the Marlins and the Braves. If they can get anywhere near that, then that deal is going to be a win. But like I said, right now, it's just it's kind of one of those moves. It's a one-year deal. If they stink, it's Adam Duvall. He tends to get traded right around the trade deadline, so that would fit the narrative with him if the Red Sox, you know, maybe want to move him for something else coming down the line. But, yeah, it's a move you don't get overly excited about because it's not a flashy name, but a move that they had to make, had to pad their lineup a little bit. The other move they made, too, I didn't have in the outline was they signed a catcher by the name of Jorge Alfaro to a minor league deal. I like that one, too. He looks like a
rock star.
He does. He looks like a caveman. Like, if you saw the video around going on Twitter, I don't know if he was playing over.
He's got a great swing.
In Cube, he does. Great swing. He was playing in one of those, not fall ball leagues, but you know what I mean, like overseas winter ball. I don't know why I couldn't think of the season. Had a wicked bat flip in that, so he's a pretty fiery guy. I like that move too. It gives him some depth at the catching position. You know, minor league guy with an invite to spring training, so you know, not on the 40-man roster, but has a chance to get there with a good spring training. They needed some catching depth, some guy with some experience. They get that in him as well. So two maybe under the radar type of moves, but two moves they had to make and end up being, you know, solid moves when it comes to like a ruling type of thing, because it is moments of the week. It's good enough for me. Again, it's not a flashy name. It's not going to light the world on fire, but a move they had to make and gives you a little bit more to look forward to in their lineup, makes it a little bit more dangerous and a little deeper than it was 24 hours ago.
Yeah, I think it's a good stabilizer piece for them.
Absolutely.
A guy, if they can get the bounce back, you know, that contract looks really nice. I just looked at an Andre Elton Simmons stats, and I don't know why anybody would want him. His last two seasons have been fucking brutal.
He was do you have him up there right now?
I had him.
I'm trying to think of who he played for.
He played for the Cubs last year.
Yeah.
And man, these last two seasons.
Did his offensive stats take that bad of a hit? Because I knew it was trending downward 2 years ago. But
he only played 34 games this year, which, you know, is, you know, worth noting. But mm-hmm. 7 RBIs, 173 batting average. The year before, 3 home runs, 31 RBIs in 131 games, 223 batting average. And then the year before, he hit 297, but had 0 home runs and 10 RBIs in 30 games. So
yeah, he's not a big, never been a big bat, more defensive type of guy.
Over the hill for me.
Yeah, he's what? How old? You still have it up there? Sorry, I keep. Yeah, I at this point, I know Andrews is probably, I think he's older, but I've come around to Elvis Andrews. I'd come around to having Jose Iglesias come back again. Just that would be the last move I think they need to make, is go get some sort of infield depth, because I like Christian Arroyo. I know a lot of people are like, oh, people are sleeping on Christian Arroyo. He's going to have a great year. I don't doubt that. I doubt his ability to stay in the lineup. Like, the guy's great when he's in there, good defender, but he just can't stay healthy. So you need some sort of middle infield depth, whether that's Iglesias or, like I said, Elvis Andrews. I don't want Josh Harrison. Ha-Seong Kim's going to cost too much money. I thought
you loved Josh Harrison. Oh, no, you're Josh Bell. Or who's the Bell guy?
Yeah, Josh Bell.
Like Josh Bell, yeah. Yep. I get them mixed up. I don't know why.
Yeah, both Josh's. Yep. Both play the same side of the infield, second baseman, first baseman. So, but yeah, just because we didn't get to talk about that, Ha-Seong Kim, I would not trade for him because they want, the report I saw was Tanner Houck and like two or three other top prospects. So like, no thanks on that. The question I had for you, because I made the TikTok on it, I didn't know in the closing Red Sox thoughts here, if you had any thoughts on the whole Trevor Story debacle. Because again, like I said, from the TikTok on that, just to, if people missed it, briefly some of my thoughts on that again. Bullshit that the Red Sox didn't know that he was injured going into the offseason. He should have got the surgery when the season ended and not had the Red Sox sit on their hands and let every free agent shortstop sign before it finally came out that, oh, right around Christmas time, Trevor Story felt his elbow go and now he needs Tommy John surgery. So
I am in BS the exact same camp as you.
All right, fair enough.
It's a weird situation. One thing I did want to mention in baseball though is shout out to Travis Shaw, retired.
I did see that yesterday, Bing today. When did he?
One of my favorite baseball nicknames yesterday, retired. That Travis Shaw era was a lot of fun.
It was. The second time around was not great, but when he first came up, thought he was going to be the next, you know, big guy, because he was had a really good rookie season, was pretty good in his second season, and then they made a really bad trade, trading him away for, I think it was Tyler Thornburg or whatever that bum's name was that never worked out. I think Travis Shaw hit like 30 home runs that first year with the Brewers or whatever it was. It was like, wow, that trade was bad. And then never really found it after that. But yeah, solid major leaguer, you know, good career for him. Wishing the best in retirement.
Absolutely. I think that's going to wrap it up for episode 126. Good to be back. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. You can find us on Twitter. You can find me at @Mike_Craddy, Ryan at @Ryan_Savaggio, and the show at @SalAndCraddyPod. You can watch on Twitch and YouTube whenever we go live around 7:20 every Wednesday night. You can follow us there as well on the Full Press pages. Thank you for the support. You know, hopefully we didn't lose any people in the week off we had to take, but welcome back. I'm looking forward to getting back in the swing of things, and we will talk to you next week. Stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people, all that good stuff, and we'll talk to you next week. Peace out.